All right. Hi, everybody. This is RCFB Talk 50. It's amazing to think we've hit 50 already. Started these back in December, but we're still going strong. So we're going to have a special guest today. We're going to have Phil Steele, and he's going to be joining us in a couple of minutes. Today, it's going to be me, Bob Ancaieri, and a special co-host, Parker Fleming, who was actually with us as a guest on a previous Tuesday. So Parker, thanks for joining us. Let me know when we've got you up here.
Hey, how's it going? Glad to be here. Excited to talk to Phil Steele, one of the goats, and do a little interview.
Excellent. Yeah, and so he should be here. Obviously, there isn't a whole lot that needs to be said for college football fans about Phil Steele. His college football preview is, I mean, it is the Bible. It is the legend. When we found out we were hosting this, we were so excited. We're like, this is going to be jam-packed with information. Parker, of course, Stats of War. We had him earlier. He's an advanced stats guy. We thought it would be fun to have a guest host for this who knows a little bit more about it than I do, personally. So this should be an enjoyable conversation once Phil arrives. I just wanted to really quickly affirm that we really appreciate all of you who've been listening in these past shows. This is RCFB Talk 50, which it's fun for us to realize we've reached that. Oh, and there he is. So we're going to go ahead and send him an invite, and we'll get him up here in a moment.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk to you about Phil. I got my physical copy just a few weeks ago, and I'm out west, so I had all the Western Pac-12 teams on the cover of it. I like that they do the regional covers there and everything. So
one of the things that I enjoyed reading as we were looking through this particular year's issue of the College Football Preview was how much effort it took to keep this publication rolling. I mean, especially over the pandemic, and how there was a real danger that the publication might cease. And it was great help from Barnes & Noble to actually keep this going.
Can you guys hear me now?
Oh, now we can. Perfect.
Yeah, I was trying to do it on my computer, guys, and it wasn't allowing me to do it.
Don't worry about it. No, and you know what? It was buried in the very first contact when we were getting in touch with and coordinating this. I know that wasn't you who was doing that, so we apologize. So, you know, and it's so funny, as you were, like, seconds before you came on, Parker, like, messaged me. He's like, I think he's on a laptop. And I'm like, oh, that's got to be it. so thanks for your patience, Phil. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, looking forward to it, and glad we could finally talk.
Me too. You know, so I've always been curious. Do you ever feel some concern that you're going to, because your preview magazine, and I'm going to get to that in a second, has sort of, over the years, I've been reading it since the mid-aughts. I remember the first time I picked up your magazine, and I'm like, holy cow, this is so much more detailed than any of the others. They actually, you care about each team. You care about the Sun Belt. You care about Conference USA. It isn't just sort of like these, in some cases, half-page afterthoughts. It's a two-page spread on all of these teams. But do you ever worry that you're going to release the preview magazine into the wild only for, like, a giant news story to break? Like, for example, obviously we had USC-UCLA erupt in the early part of this month.
Yeah, and, you know, I think with the magazine, we go later than everybody else does. As an example, with the portal. The portal closed on May 1st. We went to the press June 8th, so we were able to capture the majority of the moves. Something like a Jordan Addison moving from Pitt, the Biletnikoff winner, to USC. We were able to capture that by going later. And, the USC-UCLA thing doesn't affect the magazine because the magazine is about this year's teams. And you are correct, though. I spend the same amount of time on Troy or Akron that I do on Oklahoma or Alabama. They get two full pages. I talk to the head coaches, and you can rest assured that the four deeps that we supply for the team are completely up to date.
So, and you also have a digital edition that you update at least several times until September, am I correct?
Yeah, that's right. The digital version will keep you occupied. As an example, Bill Clark for UAB, one of the best head coaches out there, phenomenal job at UAB. He had to step aside this year due to health conditions, and we've got that updated in the digital magazine. Of course, that's something we missed in the hard copy of the magazine, which is printed already. So changes like that, or at Christian Mahogany for Boston College, for example, an all-star, all-American type of offensive lineman, and their only returning offensive lineman at BC. He's out for the year. We've got that updated on the digital version of the magazine.
You know, it's interesting you brought up UAB, because that was actually, I was curious for when you, because obviously UAB was one of those teams that you had initially ranked substantially higher in your preseason top 40, I believe it was 21, than the power poll, thanks to the several strong unit groups on the team and the fairly easy schedule. How much of a shakeup do you see there with the unexpected departure of Bill Clark, who, of course, we wish well with those health issues with his back?
Yeah, and, you know, it all depends how Brian Vincent steps in and does the job. I think they still have the talent to win CUSA, but, you know, I just have such great respect for Bill Clark that you wonder what's going to happen with the on-field during the year. At least we know the team is prepped and ready. I think the key games for the year, now you look at October 22nd at Western Kentucky. I think had I known Bill Clark wasn't going to be there, I'd probably have projected Western Kentucky as the winner in that game. I had it as a toss-up. That was part of the factor going to UAB winning CUSA. The unfortunate thing about the magazine, I can't change my predictions. You know, what you put in the print is what you have to stick with for the year. But I still think they have an opportunity to win CUSA. And I think the fact that Clark was with them through the spring, it's not like you have a new head coach coming in. They were fully prepped and ready for this season.
Phil, I have a follow-up kind of related to that. You said, you know, you kind of have to stick on what you predicted in your magazine. As you're kind of revising your process and sitting down and making the numbers and looking at wins and losses, how much iteration do you do? How often do you find, oh, I really thought that Team A would win this game when I did their preview, but now I'm looking at Team B a little more in depth. I might have to go back and revise that. How much iteration do you do before you get to your final, you know, win totals and
projections? That's a great question. And let me take you through the process of writing the magazine. It's a 7-month process. So I start the Sunday after Thanksgiving and it goes all the way through June. And that's all I work on is college football. That's all the staff works on is college football that entire time. And let's use USC as an example this year. The first write through in the magazine is my postseason write through. And naturally, I've watched all the games during the season, but now I read every article that was written about the team during the season. We have a source that sends us all the articles during the year. We compile them into a report, and then I just print off the whole report. A team like Ohio State might have a couple thousand pages. A team like Tulsa may have 200 pages. But anyway, I read through every article written about the team during the year, all the ebbs and flows of each position, you know, all the highs, the lows, the injuries. And then I write each position for that team at that point. And what I do is I write what kind of shape were they heading into last year, what happened, and what kind of shape are they heading into this year. Well, when I did that with USC in the first write-through process, they were a 4-8 team. They had a brand new head coach, and they only had 11 returning starters. So naturally, they were middle of the road in the Pac-12 South. Now, the second write-through process is the pre-spring write-through, which is we've updated the freshmen, updated the roster, any players coming or going. And USC started making some strides. Lincoln Riley had started bringing some folks in. Then the third write-through I do for the magazine is after I talk to the head coach. And ironically, I talked to Coach Lincoln Riley the day they signed Jordan Addison from Pitt. So now all of a sudden, my USC roster, which was a little bleak postseason in the first write-through process, now had Caleb Williams as a starting quarterback. My number one rated quarterback out of high school, did well at Oklahoma, a Heisman frontrunner this year, brings in the Biletnikoff winner in Jordan Addison, brings in Mario Williams, my number two receiver out of high school, played at Oklahoma last year, now comes in, brings in a 1,000-yard rusher in Travis Dye. One of my questions with USC was the offensive line when I did that first write-through process. Now talking to Coach Lincoln Riley, he told me he liked the top-end experience and didn't expect to inherit as much talent as he did. So I felt better about the O-line. The defense brought in 12 to 13 transfers, including Shane Lee, who started 13 games in Alabama as a freshman. Now, all of a sudden, that middle-of-the-road Pac-12 South team was my number one most improved team in the country, and I think they have the potential to get to double-digit wins and will challenge Utah in the South this year. So it sort of shows you how you have to adjust your power ratings all during that 7-month process, and that unlike maybe 10, 15 years ago when there was no transfer portal, teams can greatly change their outlook from one point to the other.
Phil, how many articles do you estimate you read in a given day?
Well, you know, during the post-spring or post-season write-through, I read through every article that was written about the team. During the season, my staff does a good amount of the reading of the articles. They update me, hey, you got to check this article out. You got to check that one up. I'm trying to watch, you know, during this day on a Saturday, I've got 12 TVs in front of me. So I'm watching 12 games all day long. And then during the week, I'm watching the games just one at a time. So you learn a little bit more about the individual teams as opposed to trying to watch 12 at a time. times. So the staff updates me. They give me the articles that I need to read for that week. So I probably read more during the off season than I do during the season.
Phil, when you're looking at teams that are going to make a meaningful step forward year over year, so go from 4-8 to 8-4 or something like that, what are some of the kind of common themes or the salient factors that fans could look at to say, oh, I might expect this team to look a lot better than they did last
year? Yeah, you know, the first magazine I wrote back in 1995, the first metric article that I came out with was turnovers equals turnaround. And I had 5 years of research on that. And it said basically that teams that benefited from double-digit turnovers 1 year got a weaker record the next year 75% of the time, and vice versa. If you had negative double-digit turnovers 1 year, then you had a weaker record the next year 75% of the time. Well, since then, now we're in the 28th year of the magazine, I just keep adding metric pages each and every year. I've got close wins, close losses, the YPP factor, the toughest schedule, Letterman returning. Of course, turnover services turnaround still there. The stock market indicator, all conference points returning. So I have numerous things like that that help me look at, you know, this team can make a jump, this team can't. And then the bottom line is, you know, I go through every single position and rank the units from 5 to 10 at every position. I have my power ratings. I've got 9 different sets of power ratings. I play them into my computer, which has the schedule there. And my computer tells me, hey, this team is going to have this amount of wins this season. That's the bottom line I go with is, you know, which ones are going to maybe have the better schedule to face, which ones did this. But I use all those metrics. Plus, you have to look at the overall talent of the team.
That makes a lot of sense. Kind of talking about returning Letterman and talent of the team, and you know, college football is very developmental in how success happens. A lot of times guys will get a critical mass of Letterman at the upperclassmen level. How have you found that kind of returning players and roster structure been affected kind of in the wake of the COVID year of eligibility and that shakeup? Has that meaningfully changed how you look at returners, or has that just been kind of the same pain in the behind has been for all of us to track who's a 6-year senior and who's got more eligibility?
Yeah, I think last year was the year that it had the major impact. And let me explain that. If you go back and look at last year, you go to, let's say, the Big Ten. Ohio State, always in the Big Ten title game, right? Didn't make the Big Ten title game last year. Clemson in the ACC, always ACC champs, didn't even make the ACC title game last year. Oklahoma, always the Big 12 champ, didn't make the Big 12 title game last year. Heck, even Alabama last year, they lost to Texas A&M, got outgained by Florida, lucky 2-point conversion at the end. They were able to hold on for the win. They struggled against LSU and should have lost to Auburn. They needed a miracle late drive just to force overtime and then won it in 4 overtimes. So the powers were not the powers last year. And I'll go back to exactly what you just said about the COVID. I talked this year to probably 120 of the 131 head coaches. And last year, when I talked to the head coaches, almost all of them were acting like I was hearing something for the first time. They said, Phil, this is the deepest team I have ever had. We were able to go 3 deep in the spring, and it was because of COVID. Everybody was able to return. The only teams that weren't that experienced this last year were the ones that lost a lot to the NFL. Your Ohio State, your Clemsons, the Oklahomas, your Alabamas. And as we saw last year, they weren't as dominant. Well, this year, everybody's back on the same playing field. You look at Oklahoma, for example. Last year, Baylor had basically everybody back. Oklahoma State had their entire defense back and their quarterback. And of course, Oklahoma had lost some stuff. Oklahoma had to play both those teams on the road, and they lost. Well, this year, they're all in the same boat. Oklahoma's got 10 returning starters. Baylor's got 11. Oklahoma State's got 11. They're all in the same area. And Oklahoma this year gets those guys at home, which makes me think that Oklahoma has got a great shot of running the table this year, returning to power. I see Clemson returning to power in the ACC. Ohio State, remember, Michigan had 17 returning starters last year. Now Ohio State actually has more returning starters than Michigan. I think all this thing shakes back out this year, and we see a return to the powers and less upsets and less unlikely outcomes like we saw last year. But that's a great question.
Phil, I wanted to actually ask a little bit about sort of the history of the magazine, because you have a background in printing. At least that's what you were – I know you were using it to fund the Nascent newsletter in the 1980s. Did it feel weird at all to shift printing and distribution to Learfield in recent years?
You know, the Learfield thing, what it's done for me is probably freed up some of my headaches. Although this year there was plenty of headaches with the printing because of the paper shortage and things like that. But with Learfield taking it over, it makes me not have to worry about anything besides college football. And so I was very pleased with the arrangement that we have with Learfield. We've got I think it's going to be a long-term arrangement where they continue to do this for years and years and years. And nothing but pleased with the arrangement with Learfield.
Which publications, and I assume we're looking, you know, towards the 70s and early 80s, influenced you, at least in your approach when you began to create your own?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, first of all, I could tell you that all of them influenced me in one way, and that is this. I think when I started the magazine in 1995, I was relying on preseason. I was writing a football newsletter. I'd been doing that since like 1982, and I would always go out and buy all the preseason magazines. And like I said, at that time, there was probably like 20, 22 preseason magazines, and I had a notebook and I would read each magazine thoroughly and write down all the notes, all the players and that they had on each team. And when I got finished reading the 22nd preseason magazine, I would look at my note pages and on a team of, you know, let's say a lesser team, I would have maybe 15 players mentioned total. In other words, all the magazines combined would talk about 15 total players. On a team like Oklahoma, I might have 40, 41 players mentioned overall with all the magazines. So there just wasn't enough information out there. So I started compiling the information myself back in the early 90s, you know, getting the rosters, putting them on my pages, getting all the stats, putting them all together and keeping track of everything. And then someone came in my office in, I think it was 1994. They said, Phil, that stuff you've got there, why don't you turn that into a magazine? So I did that in 1995. Thanks to Joe Del Popolo from Game Plan at the time, took me under his wing. You couldn't get into the magazine market. You couldn't say, I want to put out a magazine because it was oversaturated. There was 22 of them on the market. He said, Phil, I'll take you in as one of my titles. And he did that the first couple of years, which I greatly appreciated. And then we were able to put the magazine out. It was black and white. It was on newsprint. We only covered 88 teams that first year. But what happened is, once somebody got their hands on an issue of it, all of a sudden there was so much more information than all the other magazines that they had to have it each and every year. And that's how we've grown. I feel once I get the publication in somebody's hands, they compare it to everybody else and they'll see it's got 3 to 4 times the amount of information and then they need to have it every year.
Oh, I agree there only because there's been years where I've had to do, you know, 4 preseason media days and that's something like 80 teams. And having your magazine handy has been just absolutely critical in getting a sense of what I'm even getting into, talking to all these different programs. You know, how much, I mean, because you obviously we all love your design. It's clearly homegrown. It's clearly, I mean, long time ago, back in the day in grad school, I had to do a publication and we were always running out of a room. And when I read your magazine the first time, I'm like, oh, I know this look. This is, I've got to cram as much into, maybe I learned like TC cent font or something was like the smallest possible one you could do at like 6-point font and still somehow be legible. So, but how much of that design is self-taught? And when we hold, like when I'm holding Phil Steele's 2022 college football preview in my hands, am I feeling a direct extension of the style and approach from, you know, Power Sweep back in the day?
Absolutely. And it's about, I'm a information guy. I'm not an artsy type of guy. I'm not looking for things like that. And you read some of these other magazines and it looks like a third grade book report where you triple space everything and you're trying to fill up your page with, you know, space and just trying to take up space. I as you mentioned, at one point in those first few magazines we were putting out, I was down to 6-point type, maybe 5.5. And I'm like, okay, it's just unreadable. We've stopped that. You know, we go down maybe at 8-point type now. But the beautiful thing about the magazine and the layout is that if you, and it's something I use, and I do a lot of radio shows, and I got to tell you, when I do radio shows most of the time, I got the magazine right in front of me, is that it's faster than the internet to look stuff up. I mean, all the stuff is in the same place on every page for every team. So if you want to know a score from 3 years ago, close your eyes. You know exactly where to look. Who's a starting left tackle for any team? You'd know exactly where to look. Who was the leading rusher last year? You know exactly where to look. What was the record of 7 years ago? You know exactly where to look. The schedule for this year, it's all there. And so if you went to the internet to look this stuff up right now, you're probably, every school site is designed differently. You know, try to find the starting left tackle for Akron, for example. Go to the website. How long is that going to take you? My magazine, you just flip the Akron page, you know exactly who it is right then and there. So I actually think right now the magazine, as it's laid out, is faster than the internet. And I'm not going to change the design because I think it works perfectly. And I think that's why most guys that are in the radio TV business use the magazine. It's the quickest, easiest reference out there.
So in your magazines, you're very information based. You have, you know, your power ratings and your rankings and in a very kind of numbers based approach. My question is, when you are looking at those numbers and using those numbers to make these projections and predictions, what kind of limitations do you see from that numbers based approach? Are there places where you would change your numbers based on some off-field information? Are there places where you find some friction between trying to put specific numbers to teams so early before the season starts?
Yeah, and really, it's not early before the season starts. I know a lot of people now even talk in the summertime and they're like, oh, it's July, you can't forecast the season. I've been doing this for 28 years. Yes, you can forecast the season. And I can tell you right now, that unless there's a major injury, my outlook on the teams isn't going to change between now and the start of the season. And just because camps are opening up, you're not going to learn anything that I didn't learn. I mean, like I said, I talked to 120 of the 131 head coaches, and these coaches' calls are not, hey, coach, how you doing? How do you feel about the team this year? It's like, coach, here you go. Here are my two full pages. I've got every player on the team listed, all their stats, all my notes on the players. Talk to me about each player. Tell me their strengths and weaknesses and tell me how you feel about the position and put me in order. So if I've got a guy third team and he's going to be second or first team, I need to move them. And the coach's calls generally take about an hour. So there's really not, it's not too early to put out the preseason magazine because nothing changes in July and really nothing changes in August unless there's a major injury like a Mahogany for Boston College, for example. But 95% of the stuff stays exactly the same. So I think when you look at the magazine and the write-up, you're going back to the numbers. That was the original question. I will say this. I do 9 sets of power ratings and plug them into the schedule. Sometimes my power ratings go from, hey, this one says they're 3-9, and this one says they're 9-3. Then you're like, okay, where do I put them? You have to really analyze it, break down, go through the schedule game by game and who you think is going to win, look at the matchups. So the numbers are not always, it's not easy saying, like Ohio State example this year. My power ratings say 12-0 across the board. They're a double-digit favorite in every game. A lot of teams are in that 3-9 to 9-3 range where you've got all these different things, and you have to factor in your own personal sentiment on that and really reflect on the coach. Give an example, Kansas State. For years, Bill Snyder, and I think he was one of the greatest head coaches of all time, but my power ratings would always say Kansas State's going to be 6-6 this year, and Kansas State would always finish 9-3. So I adjusted after like 2-3 years, like, all right, my power ratings are saying they're going to get 7 wins, but that's Bill Snyder. They're going to get 9 wins. I guarantee it. They're going to win 2 games they shouldn't. So you have to look at all the different factors before making that final decision.
That makes a lot of sense. Phil, one more question from me. The median fan, the median college football fan who, you know, likes to drink a beer on Saturdays, roots for their team, and maybe isn't as deep into the numbers and the information, what is one piece of advice you would give to that median fan this fall to say, here's how you can watch football and understand the game and the narratives a little bit more intelligently if you wanted to learn more about the game of football and be more of a information-based fan as opposed to just the flipping on the TV on Saturday?
Yeah, I think the best way, you know, and a lot of folks, I would say, first of all, they're probably following one team and they probably know that team. You know, if you're in a, you probably have a favorite team, then I would say just use the magazine and just read about the opponent. And then you really have an idea about both of them. I really go so in depth that in the magazine, you can go each position. And, you know, it's something that I've spent an hour on each position going over exactly this is what I think it's going to be this year. So I think that's the best way. It requires a little bit of work, a little bit of research, read the magazine, but I think it really would help you. But, you know, we give you the projected starting lineups of 3 deeps and 4 deeps on each one. So I think that's probably the best way to do it. And by the way, guys, since we started late, we can run this a little bit longer if you have time.
Oh, we appreciate that. We'd love to. You know, Phil, one thing I found really it seemed like a really interesting story, and it was in your magazine this year as well. The story of how Barnes & Noble sort of helped out in 2020 was a fascinating bit. Could you tell us more about that when the COVID was happening in the magazine? You weren't sure whether or not you were going to move forward.
Yeah, it was really fascinating. And for years, I'd never really made money on the magazine. You know, it's not been a big moneymaker. But 2020, I'm wondering if there's going to be football. Am I going to publish a magazine? Some of the conference say that, you know, well, after we publish a magazine, that is when Big Ten and Pac-12 said we're not playing football this year. But so I'm really wondering. I'm like, you know what? As opposed to doing what we normally do, which is send a couple hundred thousand magazines off to the newsstands and then putting them out that way, I'm not going to do that this year. I'm just going to sell it online. And, you know, so we did that. And then Barnes & Noble contacted us, Krifka did, and she just wonderful. Krifka probably saved everything. And she said, you know what? Barnes & Noble needs your magazine. You're our number one seller that we have. And I was like, oh, okay. But, you know, here's how the magazine business works. You send out the magazines and they pay you for the ones they sell. The ones that don't sell, you get nothing for. So it's really a risky thing on my part. And she just stepped forward and said, okay, we'll buy the magazines. And so they bought the magazines from me, them taking the risk. And that really helped the business. And at that point, it just emboldened me to say, this is a magazine that people need. I changed my whole outlook from saying, you know, I spent so much time and effort on this thing. Why am I doing it? To the point where now I'm like, you know what? This is my life. So I'm just going to keep doing this for another 28 years. So I can't thank Krifka and Barnes & Noble enough for what they did for the magazine.
That's great. We appreciate Krifka too, wherever she is. Thank you. What, you know, this is something I've always been curious, because again, you've got your fingers on the pulse of college football year in, year out. What do you think of the direction things are going as a whole? I mean, there's obviously NIL deals. There's this conference expansion and mega conferences. What are your thoughts on it, both, you know, as professionals and as someone who truly loves college football like you do?
Yeah, I could tell you as a traditionalist, it's tough when change happens like that. But if there's one thing certain in college football, it's that change is going to happen. Now, the NIL thing, you could tell that from the very beginning. People ask me, what do you think of this NIL? I'm like, it just means people are going to start buying players, which is basically what they're doing in a lot of respects. It's not the way they wanted to do it, but hopefully they get some guardrails on that and rein it in a little bit and make it better. But as far as the conference alignment, you know, let me tell you a little story. Go back to 1995 in the magazine. And I just looked the other day. The first magazine had the Southwest Conference in it, Texas A&M, Arkansas. And guess what? The next year, 1996, the Southwest Conference was disbanded, which was major back then. And some of the teams went to the Big 12. Some of the teams went to the SEC. And you're like, wow, what is going on with college football? But guess what? It adapted and emerged. And I think college football, to me, it's my pure love. It's the one sport I follow. I don't even really follow the NFL. I follow college football. And I think college football, even if it goes to two or three super conferences, which it appears like that's what we're heading, that it'll be just fine in the long run.
Phil, I have a question about specifically James Madison, but kind of vaguely more about your process of how do you incorporate and evaluate an FCS team coming into your rankings? Is it kind of an easy transition saying, hey, I know what I'm looking for and the information's available? Or is there some kind of guesswork in figuring out where they will slot? James Madison debuts at 113, I think, in your power rankings ahead of, for instance, Vanderbilt. So what, how do you evaluate those FCS teams when they're moving?
You know, that is it.
And I just want to say Vanderbilt also somehow had one vote in the preseason SEC media day poll. So James Madison is ahead of one of the, at least one media member thought was going to win the whole SEC.
Yeah, that is remarkable that somebody voted for Vanderbilt. But I guess that's somebody that isn't held accountable for their votes. Can you imagine if I put Vanderbilt to win the SEC? That would have been something. But anyway, that's a great question. Now, if you go to my website, philsteele.com, you can go back and look at FCS. Just click on an FCS team. And we give you the last 10 years. In the last 4 years, we've been doing individual player stats on the FCS. So you could actually go game by game in the FCS. We do power ratings on the FCS. Now, I don't do 9 sets. I'll be honest with you. I do 3 sets of power ratings on the FBS, but they're the same power ratings we use for the FBS. And I think that makes the transition better for me. Now, what would have helped me this year is if they return more starters. They only have 9 starters coming back this year. They lose their quarterback. And I don't know if you followed James Madison at all last year, but they had to throw the football all over the field because their offensive line and running backs got banged up with injuries. So all of a sudden, their quarterback, Cole Johnson, hit 68%, threw for 4,000 yards, and they had a 41-4 ratio. That's not going to happen this year. They're going to go back to the type of offense they normally run, which made it a little bit more difficult. They only have 9 returning starters. They lose some key guys off the defense, and they're moving up in transition. But I think the way I did it is I took my power ratings on James Madison, updated them like I normally do, and it sort of melded in pretty good. Now, does that mean James Madison can't contend in the Sun Belt? No, I think all the top 6 teams in the East, that's a brutal division, can play in the Sun Belt this year. It wouldn't surprise me if they get towards the top, but I think they think the fact they only have 9 returning starters coming back has them having me more towards the bottom of a very rugged East division.
Well, Phil, you know, I know we want to still respect your time. We appreciate you staying a little bit over. Can you tell, for those of us, I mean, I'm sure most of the people, especially on this Twitter space, are big fans of your magazine. We all know it really well. As I've said, I picked up mine, gosh, my first issue probably almost 20 years ago. For those of anyone out there who might not be familiar, why should they come to you and what should they know? What's the thing that you would like people to take away about Phil Steele's college football preview?
Yeah, the main thing that Phil Steele's College Football Preview, the main things, number one is just the sheer amount of information, 3 to 4 times the amount of information any other magazine. And then the same amount of coverage on a team like James Madison or Akron that we give you on Alabama and Auburn. And, you know, the big thing for me early on with the magazine was just getting it in people's hands. Like yourself, you said you've read the magazine for 20 years. Once you get a hold of a copy of a Phil Steele College Football Preview, it becomes your Bible of college football. You'll realize that nobody else has that type of information and you need it because now you're informed and you have all that information. I think it makes you an expert on all 131 teams the second you get your hands on a copy. So the basic thing I would say is go out, open up a copy, compare it to every other magazine out there, and you'll see it firsthand.
Well, Phil, we really appreciate you joining us. This was an exceptional talk. We enjoyed it a great deal.
I enjoyed it a lot as well. And I apologize for the beginning. Had I known it was only on phone, I would have been right on there. But I was a little frustrated.
Don't worry. We run into that.
Yeah,
that every possible which way.
You tell me, hit the accept button. I'm like, where's the accept button?
I credit Parker for realizing what was happening. We're like, oh, it's somehow. Yeah, and sometimes that we're going to be a little more vigilant about that in the future. But, I mean, every second of this was a great joy. So we really appreciate it.
Hey, a lot of fun.
And thanks for all that you do.
Hey, thank you very much. It was a lot of fun talking football with you guys today. Really enjoyed it a lot.
Thanks for your time today, Phil.
Thank you.
And thanks on behalf of myself, Bob Akhayeri, Parker Fleming, who's been co-hosting with Stats of War. He's an advanced stats guy who loves talking about it, as you could probably hear. Just wanted to let all of you know we have another fun Twitter space coming up on Monday. Texas Tech head coach Joey McGuire is going to be joining us. We set that up yesterday. We set out a little teaser with Cacti instead of the name, and even the Texas Tech football account decided to roll with that, which was wonderful. So we're looking forward to talking to him at 11 a.m. Eastern on Monday. And then we're going to have Lane Higgins from the Wall Street Journal joining us on Tuesday night at 10 p.m. And we've got others that we're setting up as we speak. So on behalf of myself, on behalf of Parker, thank you for joining us. It was great talking to Phil Steele. I hope you all have a great day. Now, I'm going to hang up and listen.